the Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in Wine and Space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to another edition of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
This time we are watching Jodie Whittaker's finale as Doctor Who. It's The Power of the Doctor.
Hello, Doctor. Welcome to the end of your existence.
A dozen of the world's leading seismologists have gone missing. 15 of the world's most valuable paintings have disappeared.
Can I let you in on a little secret?
A Dalek incursion on Earth is imminent.
Has it never occurred to you that it could be a trap?
This isn't a day. You are erased forever. Bit of a conversation stopper.
It's incredibly dangerous.
It was a really bad idea.
Anything could happen. I want it to end.
Yes! We're going to need a drink for this. Dr. Exton, I'm going to get out the tonic screwdriver and open up the gin. This time we are drinking Purist Zest Gin. It's 37.5% and the info bollocks says... Founded by 21-year-old, now 23-year-old, distiller Bruce Walker during the height of the pandemic, Purist Gin is now a youth-centric gin startup, having just passed its second birthday. From brewing bathtub gin at school to travelling Asia and completing a Scottish distilling apprenticeship, founder Bruce's journey into the world of gin began long before Purist started. Now a multi-award-winning family-run business, they expanded their product range to four different gins. Purist Zest is one of the most recent releases, a lighter, fruitier gin, while still being a classic London dry. A twist on their award-winning recipe, Purist Zest is distilled with up to three times as much citrus peel. All the flavour in Purist gins comes from the distillation, with no artificial flavourings or colourings. Initially, there are strong citrus notes on the nose, with hints of lemongrass before the familiar backdrop of juniper develops. On the palate, Purist Zest is light, refreshingly smooth, with an undeniable hint of lemon and lime, complemented by more classic juniper and coriander flavours. Zest's finish is clean, with a touch of sweetness. Right, you're selling yourself there, kids. Dr. Exton, nasal appraisal.
Just a little bit lemony.
Very, very faintly. Oh well, dive in. Oh.
Oh, that's rather nice.
Yeah, now I'm not fond at all of lemon gins, but that is nice. It really is nice.
A lot of them end up quite fairy liquid, and this isn't.
Not in the slightest. They've got the lemon. It's not artificial. It's not bitter. It's not sharp. It's not fairy liquid. They've got all the flavour out of it, but without any of the bitterness and without anything. I'm really quite impressed with that.
Yes, I think this is lovely.
Can't say that it would be something that I would really race towards, but that is the best lemon.
It's really nicely done.
It is. It's the best lemon gin that I've ever tasted. I'm giving it 4 out of 5.
Yeah, it's 4 out of 5 for me for exactly the same reason. Lemon gins aren't something I'm wildly keen on, but if you're going to go for a lemon gin, this is the one to go for. It's absolutely lovely.
Well, just for once, we are skipping the Black Archive, largely because we can't be arsed. So it's Run VT on Power of the Doctor. We are recording this on the night after The Power of the Doctor aired, the 23rd of October 2022, Jodie Whittaker's final episode as the 13th Doctor. Oh, if you've not seen it, I'm not going to... I was about to say spoil the plot, but the problem is that I can't actually tell you what the plot is.
Which plot? It's about five stories rolled in together.
What I saw last night was everybody else's ideas over the past 60 years picked up, polished off as his own, put into a blender, put on a high speed for 5 minutes, and then spat out onto the screen as if somehow throwing everything at an episode is going to make it good. I think it's what you would describe as fan wank.
This, and you're going to hate me for saying it, this is what would happen if Big Finish took over production of Doctor Who and were told that they only had one story to do. And it would be everything and the kitchen sink and then flags on the top of it. I mean, to be fair, now there is no pretense that it's just a ripoff of other eras. They even had all the different doctors morphing into one another. They had a cavalcade of past companions at their final sequence. Missing, I hasten to add, Polly.
And Ryan. How could you forget Ryan?
Very easily. I mean, in terms of the modern ones, there aren't a huge number that they could have put in because they've all had such ridiculous writing outs. But, and they did mention Ryan, and he's off in Patagonia somewhere. That didn't stop Jo Jones turning up because she lived in South America. But Martha could have been there. Mickey could have been there. Okay, if you want to think of it as a sort of UNIT recruiting ground, then they're already on board with UNIT, aren't they? Adam?
Adam's story has been told elsewhere, so I can understand why they've not gone there with that. But
what, you mean in the comic?
Plus, he's not a very interesting character. But...
but he was dragging everybody else out of the kitchen sink. What I would have really liked to see in that is a few people that you don't recognise. So it would have been perfect for cameos. Sit Maggie Smith there with a pithy one-liner and just imagine what the fanboys would be thinking. Who is she? Where does she fit into canon? She is canon because she's here, but we don't even know what her name is. Pepper the scene with two or three people like that, and it would have been...
Can you imagine that? Amelia Rumford's sister... Maggie Smith.
Well, they didn't name any of the others. They wouldn't have needed to name her. But bulk it out with a few extra people. Build up some of the mystery that's being missed, where every tiny little bit of the history has to be filled in. And the weird thing is, Chibnall has made a big thing about adding all of this extra pre-Hartnell Doctor stuff with no infill at all. It said, oh yes, this is all here, but we're not going to tell you anything about any of it. Could easily have done that here with the existing canon and add extra bits to it.
And that's been my point the whole way along. Last night, I was sat there watching it, angry the whole way through. And every now and again, Dawn was looking at me saying, you all right? Not really, no. Because this is, A, it doesn't make any sense. It was just a complete horrible mishmash of stuff that was ripped off horribly from other people. There was even a joke in there about the Master's Dalek plan. That isn't an original. Somebody has already said that. Somebody's already made that joke. Either it's a fan production or a published story somewhere. But I've heard that before. Chris Chibnall, you cannot take the credit for somebody else's joke just by putting it in broadcast Doctor Who.
A Zaroff reference.
Yes. There were lots of references in there.
Oh, yeah.
But they were everybody else's. All the bits that were good about that episode were harks to the past. All the new stuff, all the original writing, all the original characters were dull as shit. Now, we should have cared about Vinda. We should have cared about Dan and Yaz. We should have cared about the Quarks or the Quonks or the whatever the fuck the jellyfish in space was called. We should have cared about Ashad, who came back but actually turned out to be a clone. And it's just all... there's no depth to these characters at all. They're all just...
plots. And it's sort of, oh yeah, we'll start off a plot with 15 missing seismologists. And then the Master turns up lecturing to all of them TCE'd, and it goes nowhere, and it explains nothing. And yeah, volcanoes are involved. Well, did you really need that crappy scene in the lecture theatre to explain that? The missing works of art that have the Master's face turn in them. What on earth was the point of that?
Well, what was the point of the volcanoes, apart from having the Daleks nipped down to B&Q and buy a big drill? Because you either want to convert the entire planet to Cybermen, or you want to boil them alive. Which one is it?
And that whole bit where the Daleks and Cybermen are sitting perfectly happily next to each other and they're just looking at the Doctor getting tortured and it's all, yeah, so what? Why are they just standing next to each other when they should be trying to kill each other? Why are they not killing the Doctor? Why? And then that bloody awful bit with the Boney M.
I'm really glad you said that because I have just had this conversation with Paul Isles Rush and I really like that song. And it's been done before in Doctor Who where they've had a pop song overlaid over and it's been done really well.
The End of the World, the Christopher Eccleston thing where it's sort of, they wheel out a really old-fashioned jukebox and said, this is what was known as an iPod. And we'll use it to play some classical music. And the first bit of Britney Spears comes up.
But it's really quite sinister because everything's wrong about it.
Yeah, but it's 3 seconds of a song you recognise and Eccleston starting to do a bit of dad dancing.
But at the end of Sound of Drums, Rogue Traders comes on as the Toclophane invade. And it is about 10, 20 seconds. And it's done in such a way that the Master seems quite sinister because he's just off his head. This rah-rah Rasputin goes on for the best part of a minute to where the point where even the Daleks and Cybermen are turning and looking at each other thinking, what the fuck's going on here? And it's cringeworthy. It just goes on to, there's no finesse, there's no skill. It's like it's all been written down on the page. This will look fantastic on screen. And nobody's thought less is more when it comes to the editing.
And, on the subject of dreadful dad dancing, at least when you had John Sim dancing around the sky base or whatever it was, it was quite cleverly and entertainingly done.
Oh, yes. The only reason why the Master had the whole Rasputin visage was to get that song in. That's it.
It was like the TV producer's version of David Brent's dancing in the office. Vaguely knowing how it works, but having no clue about the specifics.
So Chris Chibnall producing Doctor Who then? None of the 1916 stuff made any sense or needed to be there. It's like the whole, was it Aleppo in one of the previous episodes? Didn't need to be there. Even you couldn't tell me why it was there.
And this is what I was saying about it being a mishmash of every plot they could think of. There is a really, really potentially interesting plot around the Master pretending to be Rasputin, manipulating the Russian court, playing on the fact that Sacha Dhawan was one of the regulars in The Great. That could fill out the episode, not pissed away in 3 scenes while you go on to the next thing that you want to territory mark.
I've got to give it credit. There were a lot of good ideas in there. They were just all, this is my scrapbook, all the ideas that I didn't get to use. I'm going to throw them all into one. If I put them all into one episode, it's going to be wonderful. It'll be all these. It really fucking isn't. And I'll point to examples like The Five Doctors or The Day of the Doctor, where you've got a load of old continuity in there. And the underlying story is gently pulling all those characters together. This, you weren't focused on the plot at all because you had Tegan and Ace thing, but that was far more interesting to me than the plot.
And although Janet Fielding didn't put in a great performance.
No, but she put in the performance she put in the 80s. And
fair enough.
I've said this quite a bit, that acting performances have changed. If you watch something like Time Crash, the performance of the Doctor between Peter Davison and David Tennant is wildly different. Now, you watch a Peter Davison episode, it is perfectly convincing because all the other cast are acting in that same way. You put one of those performances in a modern episode, all of a sudden it looks horribly dated and overblown and unnatural. And that is what we got from Janet Fielding. To a much, much lesser extent from Sophie Aldred. The one thing I will say is I think that there were some lovely, lovely nods to the past. I'm still not convinced that Chibnall wrote those because they were so well done. Certainly things like between Tegan and the Fifth Doctor and Ace and the Seventh Doctor, they were so beautifully done. It just didn't feel like Chibnall at all. That whole sequence in the sort of dreamscape with the 13th Doctor speaking to her former selves.
Obviously, one of the more determined of us.
I'm sorry?
You refuse to pass through. quite the strength of character, this incarnation.
The question is, what are we going to do about it?
Do about what?
Our predicament. This is supposed to be handed over. You can't ruin it for the next one.
And you were doing so well.
Where am I exactly? Because the last thing I remember is being forced to regenerate.
That's why we're here, to stop you moving any further through. You are not finished.
We are not finished.
We being?
Vestiges of your consciousness.
Fragments of yourself.
From the past.
Guardians of the Edge.
So, why are you not wearing?
I don't do robes.
There's always one.
Paul McGann was in there, you know, the Eighth Doctor was in there, and I'm already on board with this scene, but it was so well done, and it was such a good way of getting the old actors back without acknowledging the fact that you all look completely different now. I loved it. I think the only sad thing is that Tom Baker wasn't there, and I know he was asked, but he in air quotes, couldn't make it.
I did like that scene, or at least I liked the idea of that scene. I don't agree that it was particularly well written. I thought it was quite overblown, but I thought the idea, yeah. The scene I really, really liked was the ex-companion support group, which actually really reminded me of the Linda thing in Love and Monsters.
Oh, yes, I'll go with you on that, yeah.
And Linda in Love and Monsters, I absolutely loved at the time. It was the rest of the episode I wasn't keen on. I must go back and revisit it because with everything that's happened since, I don't think it can be as bad as I have in my head. And the way that they did it, and it was just tight shots and then a little bit of a pan, and you think, my God, that's Ian in the background. And then that's Mel. I was very disappointed Polly wasn't there. Apparently she was asked and wasn't able to make the recording dates, which is a terrible, terrible shame. And it would have been quite nice to have Susan sitting there.
Well, I actually thought that Katie Manning was Annika Wills, the opening shot, because they've got the same grey hair now.
Oh, from the back, yeah.
So it was, this is no disrespect to Katie Manning, but I was quite disappointed it wasn't Polly. But Susan I'd not actually thought of. But yes, it would have been nice. I actually thought they'd miss the boat with Ian Chesterton. So to see him crop up in character.
And looking so well.
He looks amazing. He's 97, William Russell. That is not a 97-year-old man. Wow, I'm impressed. It would be lovely if there could be some kiss to that next year of all years. Next year, let's be realistic, next year is the last time we're going to be able to get all these people together again. However fan wanky it is, let's do it. What the hell?
I think with people like Ian, having them sat down for one scene realistically is your limit. He's not going to be able to do anything sort of action-y, running, anything like that. You could have Ian as worked his way to the top of some government organization and sitting behind a desk issuing orders. He could be the, well, he couldn't be the boss of UNIT because Kate has been trying to get hold of him for that. But you could have him as UNIT advisor.
But you see, even that, this is what's pissed me off about the Chibnall era. It doesn't know what it wants to be. All the others, the RTD era, the Moffat era, they've had their own identity. They've tried to weave their own mythology within the confines of the wider canon. The Chibnall era has tried to erase the canon, form its own canon, and then discard bits of it, and then just ignore bits of it, and then talk about other bits of it and ignore. And you've just not gone anywhere. You've wiped out UNIT. UNIT was disbanded last series, and yet all of a sudden it's back. No explanation for this whatsoever.
To be fair, that is how the government works.
That's a real cop-out. You've got rid of UNIT. I mean, what was the point of this? And then all of a sudden it's back and Kate's back in charge. No explanation whatsoever. How have we got there? How has this happened? So that might be how it happens in real life. You aren't watching Doctor Who for real life. You're watching for escapism. And the whole Chibnall era has not been consistent at all. That's my biggest beef with it. So while I'm delighted to see Gemma Redgrave back, and I hope that RTD takes that and builds on it, where was Osgood?
Well, Osgood died.
No, Anne Osgood died. And we
didn't know her first name was Anne.
Yes. What I will say is Russell T. Davies is good at building on theories. Just as a final note on the companion scene at the end, there's a tremendous scope there for a spin-off for a certain audio company.
Oh, fuck me, don't give me ideas. Let the BBC do it properly.
I would love to see a spin-off series with all the old companions. I've said this for a long time. I thought Torchwood should have been that. That would have been the perfect dumping ground for old companions. Really build Torchwood into something. I'd love to see Torchwood back. Yes, I did think they opened the door quite wide for that. How they deal with Mickey Smith and Captain Jack for a future production team. I personally don't care about that, but other people have different opinions. In terms of an ending for Jodie Whittaker...
I thought the whole forced regeneration, turning into the master, turning back again, bollock, bollock, bollocks, really diminished the regeneration. If you're going to have this as your swan song, your final performance for your doctor, why stop her being the doctor for half the episode?
It's not only that, it's even that has been done before. It was done in the TV movie. So every single idea that you've got in this thing has been done by somebody else better. And I am with you on this. I mean, the one thing I will say is that I've been quite open about the fact nobody has been bad at being Doctor Who. Some have been better than others. Jodie Whittaker is bottom of my pile. She is not bad at it. She's just my least favourite. But that is because the writing's never allowed to shine. The one thing I will say about this, when you sweep away all the Thasmin crap that's been shadowing over the past series, etc., all the what is going on stuff that Mars, even to this episode, you know, 4/5 of this was set up. That last scene when she finally tells Yaz to fuck off after they've eaten ice cream, I need to do this bit on my own, kid, go and piss off. All of a sudden, that was her finest moment as the Doctor. She was just her, a woman and a time machine coming to the end, and she was the Doctor. The very, very end of her time. And she walked out, and that last speech that she gave and the words that she was saying, they were really genuinely good. She owned that part for the last couple of minutes of her tenure to me. It should have been all the way through.
Yep. Tag You're It is the best line she has delivered.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree. That regeneration was splendid. The reveal was of no surprise to me whatsoever. The last person I expected to appear was Shuti Gatwa, and lo and behold, it was not. I know a couple of people have asked me, why did the clothes change? I did have to explain there is a precedent for that. The very first regeneration, which everyone sort of glosses over, and Tom Baker's boots, I suppose. And today, David Tennant's been revealed as the 14th Doctor. Shuti Gatwa is actually the 15th Doctor. It does place an undue emphasis on how much weight David Tennant has as the Doctor. That's now his third incarnation. It's a minor niggle in the grand scheme of things. Thoughts?
I think it sums up the Chibnall era perfectly. The vast majority of it is derivative and forgettable. There are some beautiful bits in it that are ripped off from other things. And there is the occasional superb bit of dialogue, but it's very occasional.
Yeah, I was angry the whole way through it. Just everything about it I thought was derivative and cheap and just not very well put together. The only bits I genuinely enjoyed were the harkbacks to the past, which really, when you boil it all down to its barest bones, speaks volumes about how much I've enjoyed Chibnall's era if all I'm doing is looking back to the past for something good.
I'm going to sound really cliched here.
Never stopped either of us.
I wasn't angry, I was disappointed. Honestly, I spent the entire episode being, oh God, really? Oh God, really? Oh God, really? Oh, Tegan, really? Oh, Ace, really? Oh, Kate, really? Fuck me, an entire room full of them. And Ian, whoa-ho-ho. It was all the classic era stuff that I was excited by. All the rest was, yeah, you really went there, didn't you? Mm.
Yep, entirely.
Well done, Crayon boy.
I think the only thing that I was completely wrong about was the kiss, which he somehow managed to avoid. So it's a bit of a downer. It's the most down I've ever been on any Doctor and any era. I am laying it firmly at Chibnall's door. I'm not pegging this on Jodie Whittaker. We've said this right back when we first did our review of Series 11, that the writing was meh. and it's got more and more meh as time's gone on.
It is my least favourite era. Is she my least favourite Doctor? I'm not sure, because even with the god-awful stuff that she's been given to work with, she's entertaining. I think she's a good Doctor. She's given fuck-awful lines. She's given nothing to work with. And she still brings something off the screen. She said today that she's not averse to returning. I would love to see her. I would absolutely love to see her written for and managed by a decent showrunner, because I think she would absolutely take your breath away, given half a chance.
Well, I think it would be criminal if she's not in the 60th. We've been told today that David Tennant's going to be in three episodes leading up to the 60th anniversary special. I would like to think that that is enough of a breather for her to at least make a cameo in the 60th. It will be an insult to her if she's not, and I just can't see RTD doing that to her. So I live in hope that we will see, we have yet to see her best lines.
Although Taggart was really good.
That was a bloody... And it was so good that I don't think it was Chibnall's.
We're kind of drawing to a close, but the one thing I did want to say, the new Time Vortex, fucking fairy lights.
Thank you. That's exactly what I thought.
And more than 40 years ago, we had the Tom Baker Time Vortex with ghost faces in it that was just astounding. 2022, we have fairy lights. That's going to be my final comment.
Well, as we kiss goodbye to this god-awful era, the one thing that I will say that I will genuinely miss and is playing at the moment is Segun Akinola's marvellous rendition of the theme tune.
Actually, yeah, fair enough. That is superb.
Mr. Akinola, you will be missed, sir. I'm sure that Murray Gold is about to take over from you, but... No, thank you so much for your music. It has been a really, really nice nudge forward in terms of modernising the show. Thank you for a marvellous version of the theme.
The best modern version, I would say. And also, we're hoping that some of the rumours that are flying around about missing episodes having been recovered and being announced for the BBC centenary are going to be true.
It would be nice, and it wouldn't be a surprise either. I mean, the dial immediately points to Philip Morris. He went on record. He wouldn't release any episodes while Stephen Moffat was still at the helm. I can't imagine he's been blown away by Chris Chibnall, because he's been quite desultory on Twitter about him. So maybe now that Russell T Davies is back, he might start releasing the cache of missing stuff that he's got stashed away.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. We don't know that for certain. But it would be nice. Next year is the year. However, moving away from missing episodes and on to one that's just aired, I think both of us remain quietly hopeful for the future of Doctor Who. It's now in safe hands again. We don't
know. No, I'm loudly hopeful.
There we go, you see. Loud and proud, yes. We have a gay man in charge of the TARDIS. What could possibly go wrong?
And scene.
Until next time, boys and girls, thank you very much for listening.
Bye now.
The Exton-Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.